Hello, and thank you for listening to The Doctor Is In. Today, we are going to talk about a serious issue, teen mental health. The U.S. Department of Health and Human Services says that adolescent years are critical for teens' current and future health. According to 2017 data from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, approximately 30% of Maryland high schoolers reported they felt sad or hopeless every day for two or more weeks in a row, enough so that they stopped doing their usual activities. While 30% is just under the national average, it is clear that depression affects a lot of teens in a debilitating manner. In Howard County, one in four high school students experience sad or hopeless feelings, and one in five middle school students seriously considered attempting suicide. As adults, our challenge is to identify when a teen is depressed or anxious or needing help and what we can do about it. Every day, our first guest sees firsthand the many issues facing our children. Please welcome the coordinator of school psychology and instructional intervention for Howard County Public Schools, Dr. Cynthia Schulmeier. Thank you for being with us during what must be a very busy time of year for you, the beginning of the school year. Dr. Schulmeier, you are on the front lines of youth mental health issues every day. Why do you think there seems to be an increase in the number of teens with depression and anxiety?
Good morning. Thank you, Dr. Rossman, for inviting me to your podcast. It is a very busy time, as you can imagine, but we greatly appreciate the audience for taking the time to talk about this important issue. You know, there are a number of reasons why we think our teen in mental health are reporting increases in mental health concerns, and there's a number of factors that we see that might be contributing to that. We certainly won't deny that academic stress and pressures are certainly one of those factors, but there are many others. We find many of our teens have very full schedules these days without a lot of downtime, and trying to balance all the requirements of their schedules, including the academics, is one area that is of concern. We certainly cannot deny the impact of social media on our students' mental health. For the adults listening, you know, it was the telephone conversations that we had with our peers. Today's students, it's the texting, it's other social media. It's the same kinds of conversations, they're just managed in a different way. However, one of the things that we know really is concerning to our students is, you know, that they are well-liked. And in a social media world, this appears through likes and other types of events like that, whereas for us, it didn't quite have that same in-our-face sort of approach to looking at concerns. Another factor that contributes that I know is very bothersome to our teens today is just all of the world events. The world events that are happening that are very tragic certainly has an impact, and trying to find ways to understand about those world events, what they mean, and how we as teens can actually have a positive impact is certainly another factor that's impacting our teens' mental health today.
I have the real pleasure sometimes of working with some of the Howard County Public School teens who are mentored here in the health department. And it is frightening to me how they explicitly talk about how they're all feeling stress as though that's sort of this normal feeling. And even using terminology like, oh, I wish I was dead, or I'm going to kill myself, as it's just a normal response that they're feeling. And I also talk with parents who understand and are concerned about the depression, anxiety, and what their teens are telling them. What can parents do to help understand maybe what their teens are feeling, or to even know what's in their head?
I think one of our largest jobs as parents, and being one I can say this firsthand as well, is to be a listener. Take the time, have an opportunity to have your child or teenager speak with you. Now, I'll admit, for a teenager, sometimes you have to take advantage of the unopportune times. The unopportune times when you're in the car together. The unopportune times at the very, very end of the day when everybody's home just chilling for a little bit. So sometimes you do have to think creatively of when those unopportune times. I think the more we have opportunities to communicate, the more we can listen and understand. And then as a parent, when something's alarming, then you can move forward.
Yeah, bring back connectiveness, and we'll probably talk about that later in the podcast. The time around the dinner table, which is hard with busy school schedules and work schedules, to sit around the table and talk about the day without our devices and other interruptions. And you mentioned also how busy our kids are. Bring back free time. Bring back recess, that the developmental norms of what we learn when we're just playing and interacting for social emotional health. We work a lot, the health department, with the school system, and we know a lot that the school system is doing for our teens and our younger kids too in terms of mental health. Can you talk about a little bit of the initiatives that Howard County Public Schools is doing about mental health?
Sure, this is a great time as we're kicking off a new year to talk about what is happening in our schools. There's a number of different things. I'll talk about some of the most current ones. Certainly, finding ways to increase the visibility of our school psychologists and our school counselors and other mental health professionals in our school, finding ways to get them connected to our students is certainly a top priority for us. Similarly, just last week, we had an opportunity to work with our school counselors and our school psychologists to provide a training on suicide prevention. That training is happening this week all the way through until the end of September, where all certified school personnel will be receiving training on the risk factors and warning signs of suicide. We feel it's real important for our educators, that is, individuals who are in the classroom, individuals who are in the hallways, individuals who are interacting with our students, know what those warning signs and risk factors are. And while certainly the topic focus is on suicide prevention, that also covers all mental health topics, such as seeking warning signs for indications of depression and anxiety as well. It's an hour-long presentation, and all of our teachers will be participating in that upcoming. Other things that we're looking at is lessons with our students. Starting this year, the Howard County School System is adopting the Signs of Suicide training. That will be happening for our middle school and our high school in the health education classes. And we're currently designing developmentally appropriate lessons for our elementary age students as well. So parents, you will see all of those things coming out this school year.
So glad to hear about the things that are happening in the schools so our kids can access those services in the schools when they're needed. You talked about teachers recognizing the signs and symptoms of mental health issues. Can you describe a little more about what things, particularly parents and adults around youth, may be looking for to know if their child's at risk?
Really, this all falls under the opportunity to provide education and awareness about the different signs and symptoms. So schools are going to be looking along the lines of those SOS lessons or signs of suicide lessons. There will also be parent information that will be sent home at the same time to provide parents with information about those lessons. Other opportunities would be like back to school night or other parent nights. But really, it's all about finding opportunities to inform parents, guardians, and other adults, what are the typical warning signs and risk factors? But equally as important is to encourage not only our students and our teachers, but also our parents to know how to reach out for help. When they're uncertain, when they're concerned, all of those are good reasons to reach out for help. So certainly we at the schools want to be available for help, but also we know our community partners are another avenue where parents can reach out for help.
Thank you, Dr. Schulmeier. Your insight is so helpful. If you are listening out there and think you or someone you know is in crisis, call 410-531-6677 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and there is someone on the line who can help. You can also text HOME to 741-741, and a trained counselor is ready to listen. We're going to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to talk about what teens are thinking, what they have to say about their own mental health and well-being. We'll be right back.
Suicide prevention starts with everyday heroes just like you. Join us Saturday, September 28th at Lake Elkhorn in Columbia as we walk to fight suicide. Together, we can help stop suicide. Register today at afsp.org/howardco.
Hello, we're back. Thank you for taking part of your day to listen to The Doctor Is In. We've been talking about teen mental health, a very serious topic, and sometimes difficult topic to talk about. One of the mysteries about teens is what are they really thinking? Our next guest is a behavioral health navigator and suicide prevention coordinator with the Howard County Health Department. Please welcome Ms. Kayla Blasher. Thank you for joining us today, Kayla.
Thank you for having me.
You too have been a part of the Teen Mental Health Suicide Initiative that the Howard County Health Department has implemented since almost the beginning. What is your role in bringing information and programs to teens and other segments of the population?
So as the youth suicide prevention coordinator with the health department, I've done a lot of outreach opportunities in our community. So often I'll be out in the community, whether it's at different school meetings or different agencies. But something that I do is a presentation called It's Okay to Ask, which is around our suicide prevention plan. So we're really promoting, you know, it's okay to ask for help, it's okay to ask for resources, but also it's okay to reach out to someone if they feel concerned for either a friend or a family member. So we talk about our youth suicide prevention campaign, talk about some warning signs and how to identify those resources. We also have a Talk Saves Lives training, which I am now trained for and certified. So I will be giving Talk Saves Lives presentations in the community. That's through the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. And it's just a very general and basic overview of suicide and the warning signs, how to have a conversation about suicide, and also how to identify resources. Something else that I've been doing is going out to different libraries for these presentations and materials, providing them to different medical offices and behavioral health offices as well, and just educating our community partners on this initiative as well. Something in order to reach the various populations is I've done some workshops with the schools, or I've gone out to different youth groups in the area in order to tell the students what they can do to get involved or how to identify these resources. We also participate in a lot of health fairs in order to reach the different communities. So whether it's the 50-plus center to reach the older adults or different health fairs for state employees or other offices, we'll be there to provide behavioral health resources and also information on youth suicide prevention.
We know from data that the beginning of the school year is a particularly challenging time and risky time for depression and suicide. You get to talk a lot to teens, just like Dr. Schulmeier, as you make your way around the county with these presentations. What do you hear from the teens? What's in their heads?
Right. So a lot of when I go out, the students are very open to disclosing some of their feelings to me. So a lot that I hear is it's not uncommon for students to feel anxious or to feel stressed, that it's something that's across the students, and again, it's common for them sort of to feel certain ways. And so I think this is why they may hesitate to reach out, is because everyone may be feeling a little stressed. And we all get stressed every now and then, but it's when that prolonged stress starts to build up that's when they should start seeking help. But again, Howard County is a very prominent school. We take a lot of pride in our education and our extracurricular activities. And like Cindy said earlier, students participate in a lot of those, so it really is a lot of the stress that students have been experiencing.
How can we help our students find a trusted adult or someone that they're willing or able to talk to when they're having difficult thoughts?
That's a really good question. So what I've found is when I talk to students, a lot of them are more open to talking to their peers about it or their friends about it. But it's really getting that guidance and that help from a trusted adult in the school, whether it's one of their favorite teachers that they're comfortable talking with, whether it's one of the guidance counselors at the school, a coach, any member of school faculty. I think it's really good to identify a certain staff member that the student feels close and has a personal relationship with or personal comfort with, and I think is really important. Something that I used to do when I was in the public school system was I would go to one of my favorite teachers if I was ever having difficulty with a class or if I was struggling with something. I would go to that one teacher that I felt comfortable with.
My kids are now old or older. I'm old, they're older. And I remember particularly when they were in high school that I probably didn't recognize the stress that they were under, or thought that maybe the stress was good for them so that they could achieve or reach their potential of whatever I thought maybe my dream was or what they were able and capable of doing at the moment. What do you wish parents would understand more about the stress kids are feeling?
I really wish parents would understand that a student's stress is very real and very valid to that student, even though a student's stress is vastly different from the stress of a parent. So I've heard some students say, you know, my parents don't understand the stress of, you know, today's school nowadays, or all the homework that I have, all the extracurricular activities that I do. But parents may think, like, you're a student, what kind of stress could you possibly be experiencing? So understanding that the stress of a student is valid, that their feelings are very real to them, and to take all of it seriously, to not say, oh, they'll get over it, this is something that a student should be experiencing. No, to just, like Cindy said earlier, to listen to the students, understand what their stressors are, and to listen accordingly, and to just be there as a support with whatever they're going through.
All very important. Even given that, sometimes teens just are not comfortable talking to their parents or finding that trusted adult, mm-hmm. but will say things to their friends. Mm-hmm. What role do friends and teens play in helping identify their friends who may be thinking about suicide or just having some mental health issues?
So yeah, teens and peers are definitely like the first line of defense when it comes to identifying these different signs, because they interact more with each other and they're more open to disclosing their feelings to a friend first off. So it's really important that the people that the teens hang out with most often, it's important to look at the signs in your friends and your peers and your teammates, anything like that. I remember when I was in high school, it was really hard going to a trusted adult. One of my friends that was experiencing these signs, and it told me they were struggling. We went to different schools, and the only thing I knew how to do was to tell an adult at the time at their school. And because in doing that, my friend had told me that they needed help, I had told an adult that they needed help, and then they were able to get the treatment that they needed. So having that impact and being able to identify a trusted adult was really key in helping my friend out.
Sure. And sometimes I hear that teens may say, don't tell anyone, or I'm not going to be your friend, or I'll get mad at you. Mm-hmm. And it may require a lot of courage and bravery on the part of that friend to say, I think you're struggling, I'm going to ask someone for help. Mm-hmm. It's okay to ask. Other than the things that we talked about, what else can teens, especially here in Howard County, do to get more involved in suicide prevention and mental wellness?
So there's a lot of different opportunities in the community. So we have different mental health and suicide prevention trainings, such as Talk Saves Lives that I mentioned earlier. Again, it's a very basic introduction to suicide prevention. Grassroots and the hospital also host a lot of different trainings, such as mental health first aid, youth mental health first aid, and QPR, which is question, persuade, and refer. So a lot of those different trainings would be beneficial for students to get involved with, just so they're able to identify when to intervene and how to identify these different warning signs of depression, anxiety, and suicide. Some other ways that they can get involved is just talking to their teachers about it and their school about it, just to get more information on mental health. We have some resources that will be in the schools this coming school year as well. Something else we're implementing soon is Sources of Strength, which is a peer-based community model to implement hope, help, and strength-based behaviors. And it's, again, a peer-based model, and we really promote this mental health and suicide prevention activities, so then students can take those into their community and into their schools.
Oh, so glad to hear so much going on. Thank you, Kayla. If anyone is interested in talking to you about getting involved in teen mental health, community prevention programs, or presentations, how do they get in touch with you?
So they can either contact me through email or my office phone. My email is kblasher@howardcountymd.gov, or the phone. Or they can also go to teenhealthmatters.org, where they can find more information on mental health, suicide prevention, any of our activities that we're having or different events. My contact information is on there, and they can just send an email or a call or just submit through Teen Health Matters.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break and be right back with our final guest, who is going to help us understand how to talk to our teens and what to say when we do.
When is the best time to talk to your family about staying in touch during a disaster? Amid the chaos? Or is the best time perhaps today? Go to ready.gov/communicate and make your emergency plan today. Don't wait. Communicate. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Welcome back, and thank you for joining in on the conversation we're having about teen mental health. I would like to bring our next guest, Colleen Nestor, also from the Health Department, to talk about what to say to teens. Colleen is a social worker who supervises our youth and family support services. Welcome, Colleen.
Good morning.
The Health Department has launched its youth suicide prevention campaign back in February. Since that time, It's Okay to Ask awareness part of the program has appeared in schools, been featured on the television, been seen in movie theaters, and of course on social media. What has been the overall public reaction to the campaign? And do you think it's making a difference in terms of reducing stigma and getting people talking about this issue?
Sure. So my experience has been largely positive. I think that the campaign and related activities of the plan have provided a safe space and an opportunity for people to have a difficult conversation. Suicide is an emotionally charged topic. You know, it affects a lot of families in different ways, but through the Youth Suicide Prevention Plan and related activities, we have created space for people to have conversations and to connect, and I think that's really important. Kayla mentioned earlier some trainings and presentations, and often after these presentations, we're approached by community members, agency partners, and there's such a sense of relief that someone is leading a conversation and giving this space to talk, and I think that that is key for stigma reduction and for giving people the opportunity to have the conversations. It's opened that door for people to really talk about a difficult subject, but to join together with knowing what to do.
We've learned that in certain cultures, certain religions, certain families, that there's a shame associated with mental illness and stigma. How do you get people talking about skeletons in the closet or the stigma or the shame and allowing them or giving them the permission that, again, it's okay to talk about these things?
It's a really good question. Some of our outreach that Kayla and I have done together is meeting with different community groups. So we've gone to different segments of the community and had the conversation and asked them that question directly, because I can't make an assumption that what I'm comfortable talking about is what someone else or their family may be comfortable about. And I think that using some of the basic language and starting with acknowledging that it's a difficult topic up front and finding out how their family or their community might be comfortable with the approach is key to making it relevant for them, because it's important that we respect the different community cultures and languages and religions that we have in Howard County. There's so much diversity here, which is a strength, but it does make it challenging when you're trying to have difficult conversations. So it's finding the people in the community who are respected, who have their community's ear, going to those people and asking them, how do you think we can talk about this with your community? How do you think we can have this conversation? And then using what we know from research and from our community partners with American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, with the school partnerships, taking the information and going through those channels to have it fit their community.
So now that people hopefully are beginning to talk about mental health and suicide, what should people be saying? How do they have that difficult conversation?
Sure. So we're not asking people to become mental health professionals or clinicians or counselors or to take that role. That is not the point of the work. But if you're worried about someone, assume that you're the only one that's going to reach out. Assume that you might be the only person that takes notice and is going to take an opportunity to connect with that person. There are, as Kayla mentioned before, there are some really good tips on the teenhealthmatters.org website. There are some direct steps you can take. You want to have an honest conversation. Let that person know you're worried about them, that maybe you've seen something in their behavior. Say, you know, you don't seem like yourself lately. Are you okay? I'm worried about you. And opening that door, Cindy said it earlier, listening to their story. Don't impose your own values or judgment on their circumstances, but listen. And at that point in time, they have a story to share. And if you're open to listening without judgment, you're offering them that space to share their story. Encouraging them to seek help and helping them connect, as Kayla mentioned, seeking out an adult, a trusted person in their community or their school. If they can't go to someone at home, trying to help them identify who they can connect with. You mentioned earlier the grassroots hotline, 410-531-6677. That crisis hotline is staffed 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Start there if you don't know where to start. Let someone help you help that person. And a key piece is also to follow up. You might have that conversation and they're not ready to connect, but circle back. Hey, I've just been thinking about you. Send them a text. You know, whether it's emojis or what, you know, whatever your line is to that person, follow up. It's that connectedness factor that will hopefully help get that person to maybe trusting that they can seek help.
Text and emojis. So glad you brought that up as someone who's old school and doesn't use that, but our young people are, and that's how they communicate. So I have to learn how to meet people where they are and not expect them to do the old school methods. Can you dispel a myth that I hear people talking about, that if I bring up suicide, it may make someone more likely to actually follow through?
Sure. I think research studies have shown that by talking about suicide and asking the direct question, and you do want to ask the direct question, are you thinking about suicide, is not going to plant the seed. I think, I don't know, might have been Kayla or someone else in a recent training, we were having the conversation. If I ask my 10-year-old to clean their room, I'm not directly suggesting that they clean their room. You know, we're not going to plant the seed for someone if they're not already thinking about it. And in fact, what happens is when you give that sign that you're open and safe to talk about that, that can often provide a sense of relief to the person who is or may be thinking about suicide, that it gives that, again, that safe space and that permission for them to share their story. So it does not plant the seed. It will not make someone who is not already thinking about them contemplate, but it then almost provides that sense of relief to open.
The awareness piece is only one part of the youth suicide prevention program. Can you explain the other pieces?
Sure. So the plan is a multi-phased plan, about 18 months to 2 years, in fact, of work. The plan pieces are based on five pillars, sort of moving simultaneously through the plan together with our partners. We've spent a lot of time talking about increasing awareness and reducing stigma, but prevention efforts is another area where we're focusing on some of the programming Kayla mentioned, sources of strength, but promoting connectedness amongst our youth and trusted adults, and creating protective environments for kids, giving them skills. Early identification is another area that we're launching into right now with communicating with our providers. How can providers screen? What can your pediatrician do or staff in your provider office? Maybe just some quick, you know, three or four question screens that the providers can do to early identify kids who might be at risk. Certainly referral to treatment. As a behavioral health navigator, Kayla has a directory of resources. We want to link families to services in the community that they can benefit from. And then the last component is a little bit harder in some ways, because it's called postvention. It's after a suicide has occurred. How do you help a community heal? First, you have to acknowledge that that loss has occurred and maybe find some brave folks who are willing to start talking about it, but that suicide impacts not just the family, the school, but an entire community. So that wraparound support for a community after a loss is really important. So those are the five areas we're concentrating on with programming.
Fabulous. What can people do if they want to get involved in any of these efforts that we know are going to be continuing for the next couple of years?
Sure. Well, one of the first things I will recommend is join us on Saturday, September 28th for the Out of the Darkness Walk. You can find information on the health department website, on teenhealthmatters.org. As Kayla mentioned, there's a Get Involved tab with a lot of information. The American Foundation for Suicide Prevention sponsors that walk across the nation, and we are having our local walk. We have several teams that are going on, and so we encourage everyone to be active and involved to show their support. And as we talked about earlier, just finding a thread that fits for your style, going to the teenhealthmatters.org website, looking at trainings, looking at some of these peer-based models, asking someone at school. I hear a lot of students, we actually have a meeting later about some students who are like starting Active Minds chapters in their community, reaching out amongst your student body, join together with folks who you share that like experience with and are passionate about it, and you never know where it might lead.
Thank you. Unfortunately, we're out of time for today, and I want to thank Dr. Cindy Schulmeier from Howard County Public Schools, Kayla Blasher, and Colleen Nestor from the Health Department for joining us. Remember, if you or someone you know is in crisis, call 410-531-6677, or you can text HELP to 741-741. Thank you for listening to this important discussion, And please join us again for the next episode of The Doctor Is In.
Connect with us. We are Dragon Digital Radio.